Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. You can ask your financial advisor about Putnam 529 for America or visit putnam.com/529. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
There's life in bookstores yet, you know. $1 billion for Barnes & Noble is the offer. The Irish are counting on some economic luck when the president visits on Monday and making music in old abandoned factories. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by MassMutual, offering business owners financial guidance for the long term. Information at massmutual.com. And by Chevrolet, maker of the new Volt, which plugs in anywhere and goes everywhere. Available in select markets. Details at chevyvolt.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It's Friday today, everybody. This one's the 20th of May. Good as always to have you here. And a very simple guide to investing today, had we been able to go on the air at the opening bell, would have gone a little something like this. Sell Greek government debt pretty much as fast as you can and buy Barnes & Noble. We'll get to the bookstore in a minute, but the European debt crisis news today was all kinds of bad. There are reports the IMF wants even tougher austerity measures out of Athens. Fitch has downgraded Greek debt again. And the Norwegians, of all people, have stopped paying on a big aid grant to Athens. A simpler way of saying all of the above, I suppose, would have been to tell you that there are fresh worries, more fresh worries, really, about a Greek debt default. But on to the buy side of today's investment equation, Barnes & Noble. Liberty Media, best known as the parent company of, among others, QVC, the home shopping network, and DirecTV, the satellite people, has offered to buy the bookstore for $1 billion. It's a tidy sum for one of the last big bookstore chains standing, but Marketplace's Janet Babin explains Liberty's interest in the company isn't really so much about the book business anyhow.
Last summer, Barnes & Noble put itself up for sale, and nobody would touch it, says analyst Brian Sozzi with Wall Street Strategies.
Here's a company that was pretty much left for dead, where the model has just become outdated.
Marginalized by discounters online and in stores like Walmart. But Barnes & Noble's been busy since investors left it on the remainder table. It got its Nook e-reader to market in time for the electronic book craze. The company says it now has 25% of that market, making it a contender with Amazon and its Kindle. The upgraded Nook Color has made gains, too. IDC analyst Tom Minnelli says it can browse the web, stream video, a lot of the same things that tablet devices like the iPad can do, all with one great advantage.
The iPad starts at $500, and the Nook Color, I think, is $250. So right there, you've got a much larger market.
A market Liberty Media could put to good use, and not just for books. The company's QVC shopping network could sell a lot of Snuggies and shiny baubles with those Nook Color tablets. James McQuivy's an analyst at Forrester Research.
Who knows? 20 million consumers who someday use the tablet or use the app on another tablet. There's a QVC population ready to be sold to.
That's if Liberty Media's offer is successful. Shareholders may be heading out for a champagne toast tonight. But Barnes & Noble may skim through this offer and hold out for an even bigger ending. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
I'll tell you, I never understood those Snuggie things anyway. So moving on, Royal Dutch Shell's claim to fame today comes on the high seas, the biggest floating thing ever. The oil and gas giant says it's going to build a natural gas plant more than 100 miles off the coast of Australia. High tech, waterproof, and built for one reason, what's expected to be exploding demand in Asia. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Scott Tong reports.
Computers and phones have gone cordless, so why not big energy factories? Shell's floating natural gas plant announced today needs no pipeline. It will drill for natural gas and then liquefy it so gas can ship straight to market. And the contraption, which makes its maiden voyage in 2016, will be small, says the company's Neil Gilmore.
We've got about 25% of the footprint that we normally have on shore, so we've been packing a grandfather clock, if you like, into a Swiss watch.
Now, it'll still be a monstrosity. Think 5 football fields off Western Australia. Lots of girth off Perth. If it works, though, suddenly it'll be possible to drill for gas anywhere offshore.
There's a lot of gas in Australia, places like Indonesia, the South China Seas, which is currently very difficult or impossible to access economically.
What's easy to see is Asian demand. Japanese sushi bars need electricity, and Japan is hunting for new fuels after its nuclear disaster. Industrial China's use of natural gas may jump sixfold the next 2 decades. Biljana Pilivanov is an analyst at Barclays Capital.
And we have new countries joining the club of Asian importers.
Like Thailand, Malaysia, Singapore. Certainly, there are questions. Will the technology work? Will natural gas prices stay high enough? Still, the big energy companies are increasingly betting on gas. Michael Rickey at Platts LNG Daily says an added benefit is a low carbon footprint.
Although natural gas does contribute greenhouse gases to the area, it doesn't produce as much as oil, gasoline, coal, competing fuels.
So Shell's new facility will be a floating hedge against future climate policy, too. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Wall Street Today, debt, Greek debt. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. August the 2nd is plus or minus 11 weeks from now. That's when the Treasury Secretary says the world's going to explode unless Congress does something about the debt limit. There are some Republicans in Congress, though, among them Paul Ryan, the chairman of the House Budget Committee, who say that that August 2nd date is more of an approximation than anything else. So that's where we're going to start our weekly wrap today. Here to do that with us are John Carney from CNBC, also Lee Gallagher from Fortune Magazine. Hey, guys.
Good to be here, Kai.
Thanks for having us.
So, John, Paul Ryan actually said on your network the other day, by the way, that the markets will tolerate a day or two or three or even four, he said, of the government being in default. Really?
And he knows this, I guess, because he has a crystal ball that looks into the future and tells him what can happen for an event that has never happened before. There's no way he has any information that's telling him that. He's just making it up.
What do you think, though? I mean, can the markets tolerate it? Let me put you on the line.
I think it would be a terrible idea to test that proposition.
Yeah.
One of the amazing things about the United States is that we have never defaulted on our debt. We're unique in the world. No other country has as clean of a record in debt as we do. Why would you want to test that?
Well, Lee, why would you want to test that?
I mean, it's all a matter of politics. This is fundamentally a debate about what our country believes in. And, you know, if in terms of what would happen to the markets, I mean, Tim Geithner has come out and basically said it would be Armageddon. Jamie Dimon yesterday came out and said it would dwarf Lehman. And, you know, it would have so many effects that would sort of cascade through the market. It would spike interest rates and really derail the recovery at a pretty crucial time. So it would not be good. No one would tolerate it.
Yeah. So let me give you Paul Ryan's philosophy here, Lee. He basically said, you know what, we'll take a day or two or three, let the markets figure it out, and then we will be in a better position to pay what we owe later. Do you buy that?
I don't buy it. And there's no way he can say that because, as John pointed out, we've never done this before. We've raised the debt ceiling 78 times since 1960, and we just don't know what would happen if we don't.
Fair enough. The only
people who really advocate defaulting on our debt are people who want to severely limit the ability of our government to borrow. If that's your position, if you want to say, let's make it so expensive for the United States government to borrow that we'd have to dramatically shrink the size of the government, then it makes sense. Yeah, go ahead, default. But if it's not your position, it seems like an insane proposition.
All right, we got 11 weeks to figure that out. Let's turn to the big news of yesterday, the IPO by LinkedIn. It went up 100 and some odd percent, who knows. Today, down about a percent to $93. John, are we in a tech bubble here with this thing?
We are almost certainly in a tech bubble, but we are probably in the beginning of the tech bubble.
Oh.
It's not something that's going to burst tomorrow. Remember, the Netscape IPO, which a lot of people cite as, you know, bubble valuations, was 1995, I think.
So that was the first real IPO of you know, the tech days, right? So that was the
right.
Big, yeah.
And this is the big one. It might not last as long. It's hard to predict markets. But, you know, as they always say, the markets and social media can stay irrational longer than you can stay solvent. Some people are very tempted to go in and short this stock as soon as they can next week. I think a lot of them will be stung because there's, you know, once these things start to take off, it's very hard to bring them back down to ground.
Lee, let me pick up on the timing thing. Are we the beginning of the bubble? Are we middle? I mean, we're talking social networking bubbles here, right?
Yeah, I actually take issue with what John said, and I'm the first to be critical of you know, unbridled enthusiasm. But if you, this is so much different than 1999, when something like 300 companies went public that year. There's basically five big companies that everyone's talking about right now. It's LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Zynga, and who am I forgetting?
Somebody else.
Anyway. Groupon, right. Yeah. Anyway, you know, it's different. And these companies, with the exception of Groupon and Zynga, have been around for, I mean, LinkedIn's been around for 10 years. No one's really had access to it yet. And these companies have profits, they have revenues, and they are transformative. You know, it's not like Cosmo.com lets you order a pint of Ben and Jerry's to your home.
I don't know, Lee. We thought they were pretty transformative back then, too.
We heard that 10, 12 years ago. All right, we got to go. Lee Gallagher from Fortune Magazine, John Carney from CNBC. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, Kai.
Thank you.
This is a big couple of weeks for the Irish. Queen Elizabeth wrapped up her visit today. Monday, President Obama follows in the footsteps of John Kennedy and Ronald Reagan with a visit to his ancestral home. The president's family tree has been traced back to the small town of Moneygall in County Offaly, whence in 1850 one Falmouth Kearney, the son of a shoemaker, emigrated to this country. Cynics might say the president is simply out for the Irish vote, but over in Moneygall, the visit has generated huge excitement and a little bit of hope. Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
People don't usually stop in Moneygall. The traffic just thunders through this small, impoverished town. It's one straight road lined with rather humble dwellings. But John Campion, who's passing through on the bus, says Moneygall's fortunes will change on Monday when the presidential motorcade arrives.
It is a great significance to the town of Moneygall, you know. It will be all, the gall will be left out, it will be all money, 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 money. So it
The locals have been preparing for weeks, patching up and painting the town, opening a souvenir shop, scrambling to finish the new Obama Cafe. And bar owner Ollie Hayes has been nervously rehearsing his big moment on Monday, the pulling of the presidential pint of Guinness.
First thing you do, get the glass, make sure the glass is clean. Put the glass at an angle of 45 degrees.
His voice is hoarse from hundreds of media interviews. The pressure of publicity is intense. Ollie says that with the eyes of the world on his pub, Guinness actually sent down a master brewer to show him how to pour a pint.
The craft is finishing it off, so the head is nice and smooth and proud of the glass.
Ollie's turnover is likely to rise sharply after Monday, when Moneygall becomes a tourist attraction. And his is not the only local business hoping to profit from the presidential connection. Across the road, Ollie's nephew, Billy, has been hard at work churning out T-shirts, every one with an Obama logo, including this one.
Obama's Irish pub, and it's my uncle's pub across the road, Ollie's.
That's a bit cheeky, isn't it? I mean, that's a presidential endorsement.
Well, you see, it is unofficially Obama's Irish pub, because we don't think he'll be having a drink in any other pub in the country.
Obama's link with Moneygall came to light 4 years ago. Genealogists traced his family tree back to the Temple Harry Anglican Church just outside the town.
And this church is the church associated with President Barack Obama's ancestors.
It's Canon Stephen Neal discovered Obama's Irish roots in the parish records. This link and the visit, says Canon Neal, have given Moneygall some new businesses and a terrific psychological boost.
It's distracted us from the appalling economic situation that ourselves, along with most of Western Europe, find ourselves in. And I think it has made people believe that their situation can improve. And I think there will be a lasting legacy from this visit.
Whether Moneygall will last as a tourist attraction is debatable. Who now remembers Ballyporeen, the Irish ancestral home of Ronald Reagan? But back in Ollie's bar in Moneygall, the locals are busy preparing for Monday's visit. After he's finished his pint, the president will be treated to a display of Irish dancing from the Obama set dancers. Watching this rehearsal is Obama's eighth cousin, Henry Healy, who works for a local plumbing firm.
The most powerful man in the world is coming to our little rural village. What more could we ask for? It's going to be one of the most historic days we're ever going to witness, and that's why there's such excitement built up around us.
If the town does get an economic lift, so much the better, says Henry. But he says just the thrill of Monday's visit will be reward enough. In Moneygall, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Coming up, making music in long-forgotten factories.
It's a strange ghost town, and it looks like people just moved out the day the business shut down.
But first, let's do the numbers. Lingering jitters set back all three major stock gauges by around 0.75% today. The Dow Industrials fell 93 points, 12,512 at the bell. The NASDAQ dropped 19 points, 2803. The S&P 500 carved away 10 points, closed at 1333. It was, if you're keeping track at home, the third straight losing week. The Dow declined 0.2%, the NASDAQ down 0.9%. The S&P 500 slipped 0.33% since Monday. Stock in the country's biggest apparel chain fell into the, it fell into the Gap. That after the chain warned that higher price tags won't make up for rising cotton costs, Gap shares disgorged more than 17% today. All right, no more puns in the numbers. Nagging worries over Europe's debt woes put upward pressure on bond prices. The yield on the 10-year T-note slipped back to 3.15%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Ally Bank, offering its Raise Your Rate CD as well as an online savings account and money market account. Learn more at allybank.com. And by Constant Contact, celebrating the success of small businesses throughout Small Business Week. Learn more at ConstantContact.com. Marketplace Entrepreneurship Reporting is supported by Farmers Insurance, trained agents committed to small business success, on the web at farmers.com. Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune in to Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events for Monday. Book Expo America kicks off in New York. It's the publishing industry's biggest annual meeting. Former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty is expected to officially join the 2012 race for president. And actor, comedian, and game show host Drew Carey turns 53 today. I'm Avishai Artsy.
This is Marketplace from APM American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. The unemployment rate in Providence, Rhode Island is 13.3%. Joblessness in most of the rest of the state is that high or even higher, has been for years now. And long-term unemployment like that tends to change the way a city looks and sometimes the way the people in it think and feel. So today for our series, The Art of Money, what artists and others see when they look at the economy, we're going to do some music. The band The Low Anthem is from Providence. They've built a following with their first two albums using a decidedly home-style approach. They use old, salvaged instruments. They perform in churches and basements and bars. They put out their records in screen-printed and letter-pressed sleeves, too. Their new album, Smart Flesh, was released by a big label, Nonesuch Records. But their sound is still more indie than corporate. Ben Knox Miller and Jeff Prostowski are here to talk about the band's new album and how they do what they do. Guys, thanks for coming in.
Hey there.
Hi.
So the reason you caught our eye was the way you recorded this album that's coming out, the new album, Smart Flesh, in a factory in Providence, Rhode Island. Jeff, give us the specifics.
Okay, so we recorded Smart Flesh in this abandoned factory building in Central Falls, Rhode Island. They have a complex of abandoned factory buildings. There are about 9 of them, and it was the smallest one that we chose as a location for this new record.
It was, Ben, a pasta sauce factory. Do I have that right?
Yeah, about 10 years ago it was. It's just been sitting empty, and we spent about 5 winter months in there.
That's not Creature Comforts, right?
No, it's very cold.
It was obscenely cold.
So here's what we'll do. We'll play a cut that was recorded in the studio. It's in the factory, rather. It's Boeing 737 is the name of the cut. Cool, because you can hear the room, right? I mean, you can hear that it's different from a studio-produced thing. Was there something about the economy of Providence and the way things have been going there for years, right, in the industrial Northeast, that made you want to use that factory?
Yeah, there's something about, I think, being in a place that used to be so full of life, and there were so many jobs to be had, and there was so much happening with the industry, and now for it to have gone 360 degrees and now all of those buildings being empty, there's something about the narrative there that I think inspired us.
It's a strange ghost town, and you walk through all the other buildings in the complex, and it looks like people just moved out the day the business shut down. You know, there's still spilled milk that's congealed on the desk and people's family photos. Eerie place to walk through.
Well, and it's, I mean, the music that you guys put on this record is kind of evocative of that. Here's another one. It's called Apothecary Love. So I'm gonna share a little radio magic here. While that song was playing, Jeff leans over to me and says, "Maybe I ought to write a letter to our listeners like Warren Buffett does every year to his shareholders. What do you think about that?" Which would be good, man. I mean, you know, you've got to get yourself out there. So two things came to my mind actually when I heard that song the first time. One is that apothecary is not a word you hear in everyday conversation, but it goes to the second thought, which is the sense of nostalgia. That's tangible, both in the sound of that song and sort of a little bit in the way you guys are talking about that factory. Ben?
That song was written around this conceptual idea we had to collect all of our unused prescription drugs, or like extra bottles of pills that were lying around, and make a giant shaker track with them. Just sort of a field of shakers, and we were going to do this sonic experiment. And then we started doing that, and then unfortunately we wrote this song to it.
So you messed up a perfectly good idea.
Yeah.
How do you reconcile the way you guys make music, right? Handcrafted with care and attention with the state of the music industry today, which is digital and online and getting stuff out there fast so that the public can hear it? How do you keep up with that curve?
I think that's the perception of the music industry, but music, it will never stick unless the other thing is in place, which is just the connectedness and the craft.
Also, what's amazing, I think, is that through the new kind of internet business model, we can really do what we want to do and do it independently so that when we say, well, we want to record in a factory, we want to produce the record ourselves, we have all these crazy ideas we want to try out. The climate right now in the industry, I think, is ripe for that and ready for that.
Yeah, the old formula's kind of been disproven, so things are pretty open.
Jeff Prostowski and Ben Knox-Miller are from the band The Low Anthem. You can hear some more of their stuff on our website. It's marketplace.org. Their new album is called Smart Flesh. Guys, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Guy.
Thanks, Guy.
Someone asking for a home.
Marketplace is supported by Indiana University's Kelley School of Business, providing a personalized approach to career advancement. Learn more at kellei.iu.edu. By Reputation.com, helping small business owners, professionals, and executives monitor, protect, and improve their online reputations. Reputation.com. And by Putnam Investments, focused on finding opportunities one stock at a time, on the web at putnam.com/largecapequity. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note on the way out today, something we could all probably use more of on a Friday, a chance to get away from the big news and catch up on the stuff that didn't quite make the headlines. It comes to us, as it always does, courtesy of Rico Galliano, Brendan Francis Noonan, and the rest of the Marketplace staff.
Nancy Fargali, editor for Marketplace. What story are you going to be talking about this weekend?
State of Massachusetts is trying to prohibit lazy cakes from being sold in its state.
What are lazy cakes?
Basically brownies laced with melatonin. Kids are eating the brownies and they're falling asleep and then having to go to the hospital.
Whoa, so these are like, this is like the opposite of Red Bull.
Very much so. You want to drink Red Bull to keep you up and then you want to have lazy cakes to bring you down.
Why don't people just have food that feeds them? Like, why do they expect more?
Because we're multitaskers. I want my food to feed me, clothe me, and make me go to bed.
How about a candy bar that would, like, edge my lawn?
Of course.
Jennifer Collins, reporter, what story are you going to be talking about this weekend?
Well, I'm going to be talking about Nathan's Hot Dogs. So you know they have this big, huge hot dog eating contest every July 4th. They've created a division specifically for women.
Wow, out of the kindness of their heart.
Well, you know, there are a lot of women who are competing these days. We're big eaters, Rico.
I guess so. How big? Like, is there a female champ?
Oh, well, they call her the Black Widow. Her name's Sonia Thomas. Her record is 41 hot dogs in 12 minutes.
My God, you've come a long way, baby. Gloria Steinem can retire.
The catch-up ceiling has been broken.
Matt Berger, senior web producer for Marketplace. What story are you going to be talking about this weekend?
The pork chopper bill.
What is this, like a regulation for a butcher's union?
No, it's actually in the Texas Senate. They've passed a bill to deal with this huge problem in the state. They're being overrun by feral hogs.
So what is this bill about?
Well, the pork chopper bill allows people to hunt them from helicopters.
Not from motorcycles.
No, that's a different kind of hog.
It's a different sort of chopper.
There is oh so much more where that came from. The podcast that Brendan and Rico do is called Dinner Party Download. The link is on our website, which is called Marketplace. That'll work. And that is Marketplace from APM American Public Media on this Friday. Today, the Dow gave back 93 points, 0.75%. The NASDAQ off 19 points, also 0.75%. The S&P 500 dropped 10 points. Wait for it. Yep, 0.75%. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Celeste Wesson. The executive producer of the program is J.J. Ewell. Coming up this weekend on our personal finance show, Marketplace Money. Forget phone calls and letters. They're so passe. There's a new way to handle your customer service complaints.
Here comes Twitter, and within 140 characters, we can actually get our complaint across to companies, and they can respond to us.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Have yourself a great weekend. We are back here on Monday. This is APM, American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.